Hello and welcome to the Mind Cafe podcast with me, Alex Leo, bringing you relaxed, inspiring conversations all about happiness. Today we're excited to be joined by another podcast legend and Need to Read's founder, Mr. Ed Cunningham. Listen in as we pick up our conversation from a sunny afternoon in London. How are you, Ed?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Is it nice to be back around real life human beings?
Mate, the sun is shining. There are people here. Face-to-face podcasts are what I live for. So, yeah, I'm enjoying it.
Same, man. It's nice to feel like we're slowly coming back to some sort of normality.
Yeah.
Slowly.
We're getting there. I'm actually not too mad at, like, the whole not being able to see massive groups of people, like, all the time, like, pubs and stuff, like, clubs. I'm not going to miss them. So I think, like, the pandemic, although it's been, like, bad, it hasn't been wholly bad. I think it's been quite good in senses.
Yeah, yeah. I've never been, like, a big club goer anyway since I was, like, 18, probably.
Yeah.
So I'm not really missing them. I am missing the pub gardens, though, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I cut out booze on, like, Christmas Eve.
Did you?
Last year.
Have you been teetotal since?
Or? Not teetotal, but no booze.
Nice. Well, yeah. It's been really cool to find out more about your brand and Need to Read, like how you structure your information for the books that you review and put out there on your podcast. Is just, I like it because it's so snappy and to the point. And I think your tagline is it read by example.
Yeah, I came up with that the other day and I don't know how it happened.
Yeah.
Someone was basically saying, oh, like my boyfriend won't read. I don't know what to do. I'm like, well, all you can do in, like, whenever you want someone that you love to do something that helps you, you just have to lead by example. And I thought, well, lead by example, read by example. And then one of my friends said that I said it, and I was like, oh my God, I did. I said that. How amazing.
Yeah. it's awesome. And I know you've been doing these book clubs. Are you doing them every month, or is it like every?
Yeah, so it's like a rolly month in thing, which is it started in March. So just had the first one go by this month. Did the Almanac of Naval Ravikant, which is very good. So I would read that if you just want a whole bunch of short, snappy wisdom. It's just insane. And then this month we're doing Surrounded by Idiots, which basically people learn about their personality types.
Yeah, I was going to say, I saw that you, when you posted about your April's Club, I had a look at Surrounded by Idiots and I just downloaded it on my new Kindle that I got for Christmas.
Oh, fancy.
Fancy. And I got through the foreword and the first chapter on the train down yesterday. And already I know I'm going to enjoy it. Talking about, like, how they, what's it called? Is it DISA system? Is that, or DISC system?
So I read the book. It was the first book I ever read in the day on my flight to Australia on January the 6th, 2020. And I don't remember all too much of it. So I'm ready for a reread.
Oh, right, yeah.
But, like, the reason I was like, this book's amazing because it's saved relationships of mine, because I understand people's personality types and, like, they're set with that. And it teaches you how to deal with them. So, like, my sister's a red personality type. Have you read that bit yet?
No, he's literally just explaining at the point now, like, how the system's split into colours, right? So you've got, like, red, blue, yellow, green.
Yeah.
And it stands for, what was the acronym for, do you remember that? It was like, I think I've got it written down. Is it dominance, inducement, submission, and analytical? So, like, how your brains are wired. Is that right?
So there's so much that goes into it in terms of, like, personality types, and that's why it's something that I want to read, like, deeper into. Like, Surrounded by Idiots, that's a book that's meant to, like, cater for the masses, and there are obviously books that these people who write the generalized books have got that information from. So I'm just about now, like, I'm like, well, if reading's my job now, I need to delve into those books that the people that write books read before they write the books.
Yeah, yeah.
It seems like a long-winded way of saying basically just read what the authors read.
Yeah. It's a strong way to go, though. I mean, it's when you kind of start delving into these more analytical books when it comes to, like, human psychology, it's like opens this Pandora's box, or it has for me at least, on the couple that I've read so far, just how complex like we all are as human beings, and how easily you are, like when you grow up, how easily it is to take everything personally, you know, like when something doesn't go your way, and or, you know, or someone's morals or whatever don't align with how you see the world.
Yeah,
it can be really hard when you're younger. And I'm only recently coming to terms with that now at like 27. Not everybody is going to align with you, and that's okay. It doesn't naturally make them better or worse. It just it just is human nature, isn't it?
Yeah, that was one of the first like proper physical books that I read was The Righteous Mind by this guy Jonathan Haidt. So he's a social psychologist, so not a sociologist, but a social psychologist. And at the start of the book, he gives you all of these like thought experiments. So if I was to say to you, I was like, oh, so your neighbor last night, Alex, she is a widow and she had fish and chips. How do you feel about that?
I would feel indifferent, I guess. I don't know.
So that's because we're like, you're Western. It's called, you're weird, essentially. So it's like Western, educated, and then whatever fits for the rest of weird. But if you were to be in like the north of India, there's a particular like line off of like Hinduism where fish is an aphrodisiac. So if a widow was to eat fish, she'd be like insulting her dead husband because she was going to get horny from eating fish. and there's nothing like...
That's wild.
There's nothing that makes that right or wrong, because like why should we be right on that and why should they be wrong? It's just how it is. That's how they're brought up. It's their religion, it's their culture that's molded them in that way. And the book just highlights essentially why everybody's different, and it's like why good people are divided by politics and religion, I think is the like subtitle of the book.
Right.
And there's just so many different things, like split opinion. And there's another thought experiment, and this one's a pretty weird, right? So like a brother and sister go to holiday on like to France. They're both over 18, they're both virgins, and one day they're like, right, do you want to like try sex? She's on birth control, he uses a condom. Why is that wrong?
I mean, straight away, just it makes my feel uncomfortable to even like go there in my mind.
Yeah, it's weird, right? And like people would say, oh, well, incest wrong. It's like, okay, well, why is incest wrong? Oh, because when you give birth to a child through incest, like they'll be deformed.
Deformed or something, yeah.
And it's like, well, there's birth control used. Like they're not going to tell anyone about this. It's their secret to have. And it's like, why is it wrong? And you have to dig deeper to a point where you're like, actually, it's kind of not. I still think it's wrong, but I know that if I dug deep enough, I would find that I didn't have any evidence to base the fact that I thought it was wrong on.
Yeah, definitely. It's really interesting how we're wired, isn't it? Like through different cultures around the world, and how different cultures perceive things. And it all comes back around to like, what is a moral code, I guess? Like, you know, when you break things, you can break things down far enough to kind of, and it can lead to quite an enlightened place, but it can also lead to quite a dark place too. If you know, sometimes when I've thought about these things and I kind of zoom out like telescopically and look down on everything, and sometimes I'm like, what is the point of anything? Like when you start going down that path, it can be quite a nihilistic kind of approach, can't it?
Yeah, definitely. Take Buddhism, for example. Like that's pretty heavy in a lot of self-help things, because obviously Buddhism's like the only religion without dogma attached to it, and like you have to sit here, do this, pray to this god. And I think it's anatta is a Buddhist thing. It's like the concept of no self. And they say, but there was a Thai monk in like the 90s who came out and said, it's like, if you try and conceptualize the concept of no self, your head will explode. Like there is no self.
Yeah.
And it's just crazy. So like sometimes you read these books about, like, there's one book called like Why Buddhism is True. And he basically just looks at Buddhism versus natural selection. Like if everyone was a Buddhist, we wouldn't have a human race within a generation.
Wow. Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's it is crazy. And it's fascinating too. And, you know, there's plenty of, obviously there's positives to sort of take from taking a more enlightened approach on. I just think being more aware of, I was trying to think of a quote that you quoted on your Instagram from a book you were reading the other day. Ooh. About
I do a lot of quotes. Yeah, so you do. I don't know if I'll be able to remember it.
You do. It was something, I've lost my train of thought now. It was something along the lines of, if it doesn't, was it the Mark Manson book? You know, if it's not.
Oh, if it's not a fuck yes, it's a no.
It's a no.
Yeah.
And things like that. And there was another one too about, you know, if something about along the lines of if it, you know, if it doesn't really matter, like what really matters, you
yeah.
know, the amount of things that we get caught up on that we think really matter when really, when you break it down. I can't remember the quote now, but it was a good one.
It's a good kind of like attitude to adopt, I think, because when you understand that things don't actually matter, you're kind of liberated in a sense. Like,
yeah.
What actually matters? Like, does it actually matter that I'll like put out a podcast on a Monday and a Thursday?
It's
like,
yeah.
Not really. Like, no one's life is going to change if I stop doing that. But that's when you have to like, you have to take responsibility yourself to apply meaning to things. So I think when you understand things don't matter, that's when you have to make sure that it means something to you.
Mm.
And you have to search for that. And it's tough sometimes.
Yeah.
But I think it makes life a little bit better when you realise that the stuff that doesn't actually like matter.
Yeah.
Has to mean something to you, and you have to like apply yourself to it to like push it out to the world,
yeah,
kind of, and just be like, it doesn't really matter, but like here it is anyway.
Yeah, you know, as a musician, I can totally relate to that. Mm. You know, being relatively well unknown in terms of the independent music world, but it's like, I think a lot of that desperation, it feels a lot of the time, is you know, everybody seeks. It's a primitive trait, isn't it? Back when we were tribal, it's like. You seek for approval. You seek approval from your siblings, from your family,
yeah.
you know, from people that you love and trust. It's a natural protective thing to feel accepted. And I
yeah.
think like we're living in through this like social media age where now like the whole globe's connected and you're looking for acceptance through people on the other end of some gadget somewhere that you've got no real affiliation with.
Yeah,
it's no surprise that they're not really going to dig what you do all the time because there's not that connection. But it still doesn't stop you having that old-fashioned, inbuilt, primitive feeling to like want to be loved and accepted by everybody.
Yeah, because you want to spread your genes, you want to carry on like the family name, or you want to continue your genes, and
yeah.
that's what it comes down to. Like that's the primitive side of it, and everyone says like, oh, get rid of like the need for validation. But the thing about validation is, it's actually pretty nice when
yeah.
people like what you do. And it's nice to be told that you're good at something or like something you have produced is good. But it's also like you kind of need to detach yourself
yeah.
from that. As much as it's nice to be like, oh, that's good. You also need to be able to be like, but that's not why I'm doing it.
Yeah.
But also I'm like, if I didn't have an audience, would I just do the podcast and chuck it out to no one? Probably not. Which then is that like a bit of hypocrisy there? Once you like... open your mind up to all of these concepts, like you just question everything in life, and sometimes it's a bit draining. It really is.
Yeah, sometimes you know, you want to be a bit indulgent without having to break it down into a million different things. But I guess there's a reason why there's millions of users on things like Instagram and TikTok now. It's because, you know, those little algos are playing right into that.
Yeah,
right into that thing,
dopamine
hits,
yeah, and yeah, the shape of likes, you know, and shares, and
everybody's guilty of it. Yeah, I try yeah. and be like, in my mind, I think I'm like morally like on this righteous path to doing something, you know. But you know, I put out a tune yesterday, so I'm like having to do the to camera thing,
yeah,
you
yeah.
know. And it's sort of I feel very self aware doing that, you know. But again, coming back around to that idea of does it really matter? It's like a mind over matter thing, trying to come to terms with it. Same with these podcasts. Like I said to you when we had the Zoom meeting. You know, this is kind of new to me and it's new ground for me, you know, and particularly having a guest like yourself who's had quite a few podcasts sort of under your belt now.
Yeah.
It can feel, you know, quite intimidating and you feel like, are you up to the job sort of thing? But then you think, well, what's the worst, you know?
Who is to say that you're up to the job? Who's to say, like, I started my podcast, had like 800 followers on Instagram. It's now over like 20,000. If I thought like, oh, who's going to want to listen to me? Like, loads of my mates, like, well, why would I want to listen to you? Because, like, I could listen to Tim Ferriss or, like, Sam Harris. And I'm like, yeah, fair play. But, like, if you like talking to me, you might like listening to the podcast.
Yeah.
But, like, it's natural, like, to have, like, doubts in your ability, a doubt in, like, whether you're, like, worthy to hold the space.
Yeah. But, I think it's natural, isn't it? Everybody, even the people that claim to be uber confident and lead from the front foot, I think, you know, everybody has self-doubt. I think it's a good thing to have self-doubt, as long as it's managed, isn't it? I think that's where a lot of these self-help, I think that's why a lot of self-improvement, that whole space at the moment has become such a competitive space online, because I think a lot of people are starting to wake up to, like, the dangers of living in a technological techocracy. Is that what they're calling it now? Like,
well,
a kind
who
of
knows? Sounds
like a,
fancy,
like a just a crazy information age.
Yeah,
where you're constantly being bombarded.
Yeah.
So everybody's suddenly, like, starting to look inwards a bit and be like, "Is this normal?"
No, and it's so unnatural. Like, it's just one of those things that we get. That I've read it somewhere, and I'm going to butcher the numbers here, but essentially we get in a day now what we used to take a lifetime to accrue in terms of information. Like, that's how much information we can take on. And it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's not natural. And, like, it's quite conflicting, like, when you have the kind of jobs that we do. So, like, well, I need to use this as a, like, I need to, this needs to serve me.
Yeah.
So I can continue what I'm doing. But you also are like, I don't want all this screen time.
So, yeah, I mean, I wanted to chat to you about, because shortly before you came back from, that's what I was going to ask you about. Mm. You went to Bali during, when did you actually leave? Was it before the pandemic or as it kicked off?
So, like, my story of pandemic-based travels starts. I went to Bali last year in March when I was living in Australia on, like a couple weeks holiday. And then Australia shut their borders. I couldn't go back to all of my stuff in Australia. My flat was there.
How long were you in Australia?
I was there for 3 months.
Oh, right,
so I was
right.
Literally, I had just settled into my flat. I was in Bondi for a month. I'd been in hostels before, living with one of my sister's friends. I then came back to England after that. That's when I started the podcast. But I went back to Bali in November on, like, the 16th. So I think lockdown started again around, like, the 7th or 8th. I can't remember the specific dates, but I went there on the 16th. So I went when England was locked down.
Yeah.
It was a very weird vibe, like, in the airports and
stuff.
Yeah,
was the flight over, like, super empty?
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, I bet.
I had, like, 3 seats to myself, so I was, like, led across all of them.
Lie down, yeah.
The annoying thing was obviously having to, like, wear masks on the plane, because, like, it's pretty gross on a plane. You mean, like, the, like,
yeah,
air that
yeah,
you
yeah.
get's a little bit weird. Just having a mask there as well.
I find, like, them sort of counterintuitive, because you end up touching your face, like, way more than you would without one.
Yeah.
You know, like, in terms of germs and stuff, you're, like, fiddling around with
just everything. So then I moved to Bali and I was there until end of February. I came back on the 1st of March. So I was there for about 3.5 months. That was enough. Like, it's a very weird place at the moment, because obviously they're such a tourism-based, like, society in terms of how their money
comes
in.
Yeah, I was going to ask what the vibe was like out there during.
Strange, yeah. I could train jiu-jitsu, so I was training every day. That was great. That's kind of, like, the reason that I went out there. It's because I just love Bali MMA. It's just such a nice, like, family vibe of a gym.
Yeah.
But, like, where I was living, if you walk, like, 200 yards down the road, like, there's a gap in the buildings and there's just, like, a shack. And, like, when I'd go and walk the dog and stuff in the morning, sometimes I'd see, like, the kids that lived in the shack, like, literally just going to the toilet in the stream outside. Like, it was horrible to see, because you feel so powerless.
Yeah.
Because, like, if you give this one family money or, like, give them stuff,
yeah,
there's then hundreds of others.
Yeah, it's
in
just
Bali.
Like, a never ending.
Yeah. And it's super, super humbling. And, like, I feel like I've become more charitable, like, since I've come back. Like, I like the idea of giving stuff away more, because I realized, like, how little some people have. And it was super nice sometimes. Like, I'd ride my bike out somewhere in the morning, and there'd be people going to work at, like, 6 a.m. in the rice fields, like, old people that definitely shouldn't be working. They should be retired, just going out into these rice fields, which are essentially just, like, knee deep mud, with just little shoots of rice plant in there.
Yeah.
But they just look so happy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, they have so much joy in the simple things.
Yeah.
I think it almost puts us at like a disadvantage sometimes.
So in some respects,
being exposed to so much like technology, so much information. Yeah.
I would say so too. You know, I was talking to my granddad during the lockdown, and coming back to what we were saying earlier about, you know, the obsession with information and just the information overload. And I was talking to him about the fact that I was coming to do these podcasts about. Mm. He was like, "What's it? You know, what's it about?" And I said, "Oh, it's, you know, about self improvement and." It was quite funny, really, just hearing his take on what he thought it meant to him. And he was kind of like, it's interesting because, you know, he grew up in the north of England he grew up in Burnley, like in Lancashire during the whole mining crisis thing. And
pure, like, working class.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, just really, really poor, like didn't even have enough money to have, like, glass in the window panes. So they used to put, like, old bed sheets up there.
Jeez.
Up the glass. And he was, like, him and six siblings. And they'd all eat like whatever they could find around this table, and then they would put a bed sheet on the table that they'd just eaten on, and they'd all have to sleep on. Like, it's just poverty that we've kind of, for most of us, thankfully in the West, we've kind of forgot about. And it was only like one man's lifetime ago that the working person was kind of at that disadvantage. But
well, we were getting bombed by the Germans then as well.
Like, yeah, it's crazy.
It wasn't that long ago.
But, you know, he was saying this idea of time, when times were simpler, the one advantage that he always found he had was because he was so busy just having to, like, survive.
Mm.
There wasn't really any time to think about the greater consciousness and, like, the world, you know, and what does it all mean? He's not really, you don't really have time to ask the question, what does it all mean, when you're just trying to scrap about for your next dinner.
Was there?
Like, yeah, yeah, yeah. So it was quite an interesting discussion, an interesting take on it. And I think that's, like you say, coming back to the barley thing, it's the stark contrast is wild for how we live our Western lives to people that live more rurally.
And, yeah.
And kind of...
humbly.
Yeah.
To put it politely.
Yeah, yeah.
Live in shitholes, essentially.
Yeah, but it's like something about it that you kind of... You know, there's a reason why you're attracted to that, to a place like that.
Yeah,
because there's something in you as a human being that kind of wants to sort of claw back to that.
Yeah,
maybe not all the time.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like the places I was living in Bali were not nice. They were pretty.
Did you pack plenty of Imodium?
I actually shat myself three times in January because I had like some virus from probably cleaning my teeth with the tap water there, probably meant it was like that girl who did a wee in the stream. It was probably that I was cleaning my teeth.
Yeah,
like it's obviously pretty much a third world country. But yeah, you have to be really careful out there with like what you eat and what you drink because it'll get you back.
It's crazy how resilient we are though, isn't it? Like when you think, you know, that people that are native to that, to those areas, they're surviving, you know, and their bodies just build up this tolerance.
Yeah. And we're pathetic.
Oh, so pathetic. Like, I don't want to like bash the Western culture thing because I know it's done a lot.
It serves us quite nicely.
Yeah, yeah. But at the same time, you know, it's, it is amazing how much we've forgotten. And I think that's why a lot of people are searching for truth in self-improvement and stuff now, because they've kind of, in the West particularly, we've sort of lost our ability to accept like suffering.
Mm-hmm.
I know you talk about it in some of the books that you've mentioned about this idea of like the yin and yang effect, I suppose, like the good and the bad, like not everything you do, you know, the whole world isn't a bed of roses, is it? That you're supposed to have suffering goes along with the success in your life. And it's, you know, you can break it down to loads of analogies, whether it be like physical fitness, that, you know, the suffering of that, or your cold baths that you've started doing.
Yeah.
That's something I wanted to ask you about, actually. Yeah. When did that first come about? I know you've answered quite a few questions on it on IG.
It's cool, mate. I get questions every day. Like, where's that from? Where's that bath from? Like Amazon. Just go and buy it. So I started doing ice baths in Bali because there's like nice little recovery centers that you can go to. And I was training quite a bit. So like I needed to go somewhere to like relax.
I suppose it's a little more appealing when it's 40 degrees outside as well.
Yeah, and like the baths were cold there, like 4 or 5 degrees, like real cold water. And I just got obsessed with it because the first time I went in, I did 27 seconds and I had to just get out. And then I went from 27 seconds. By the end, I did 10 minutes. It was actually 10 minutes and 17 seconds was like my record. But it's just about like centering your mind and like calming it. And it's the fact that I don't want to get up and get in cold water. I don't do it for any particular recovery benefits or anything like that. I just do it because I don't want to do it. And there's something in doing stuff that you don't want to do that will just build up, like you said earlier, like resilience and stuff like that. And it just makes me feel good after. Like I was in there this morning for like 2.5 minutes. It's going to get really cold next week. So I'm quite looking forward to it actually getting like actually cold again. Because it's about 10 degrees at the moment, which is like, it's just moderately uncomfortable.
Yeah. It's amazing how quickly you acclimatize to it as well, once you've been doing it for a little while.
Yeah. And when you just learn to like calm your breath and just start like focusing on like, if one part of your body really hurts with a cold, you pay attention to it and then maybe after 30 seconds that pain isn't there anymore and it's popped up somewhere else. You know, right, well, I'll pay attention to that. And it's just essentially about like moving your focus around.
Yeah. Do you fancy yourself as a bit of a Wim Hof?
Nah.
That's his name, isn't he? You know, the Iceman.
Yeah.
He's a loony dude, isn't he?
Mate, he's crazy. Like,
what's crazy about him is he's got some science to sort of back up his his crazy methods.
Can find science to back up anything,
pretty
though.
Much,
it's all that confirmation bias.
Yeah, it is.
He thinks he can like beat off disease with cold water, and I'm like, if you give him a dash of something really bad, I don't think jumping in cold water is gonna sort it for him.
I just think he's a hard bastard.
Yeah.
That Vice documentary when they had him like running up that mountain in Poland, was it, in the snow, just like his shorts. Have you seen that?
Just barefoot.
Wild.
People love it. People get addicted to it, right?
Yeah.
I've got a couple of friends who have done like some pretty extreme things like Everest and stuff like that. And they say like afterwards you feel sad because you that adrenaline, like the danger, the real feeling that you could die is missing when they come back home to like the Western world. And they're like, I miss it. Like I need that. Like I like that. It made me feel alive. So I think people like that, they get addicted to it. I think it does become like some sort of addiction for them.
Oh yeah. When you look at people that do like extreme sports or any kind of whatever their little fix might be, it's just like, you know, again, it's just a human trait, isn't it? To just keep amping it up slowly to get that same fix that maybe you first got, you know?
Yeah.
I was really getting into pre-lockdown. I'd started, I was actually in the beginning stages of trying to train for a triathlon.
Okay.
So I just, and I've always enjoyed open water swimming. So I'd kind of gone down that route of doing all that, but it was a real shock. I remember the first time going to my local outdoor, it's like a pond in a place called Witchbold. Mm. And it was like early, they just opened it. I think it was March, just before they locked it down. And I got one swim in before they canceled everything.
Yeah.
And it was such a shock to get in. Cause I'd had, we were talking before about doing a bit of surfing. So I was kind of used to being in wetsuits, but I'd never really done it just completely either shorts or like a swimming wetsuit that's like really thin.
Yeah, I've got a swimming wetsuit as well. They suck, don't they?
Yeah, yeah, they don't. You have to keep moving to stay remotely alive. But it's just all about this idea of like tolerance and you know, sort of learning to put yourself through a bit of suffering, whatever it might be, it's a good thing. And I think we've got a bit podgy around the edges in the West, I think.
Yeah, we're comfortable. Very, very comfortable.
You know, even the most unfortunate, up to a degree, of course, but like, you know, even people that are unfortunate in the West, there's still an outlet where most of the time people can get some sort of roof over their head and some sort of warmth.
Yeah.
And usually a TV.
Yeah.
And usually an iPhone with Instagram and Netflix and all the usual gadgets.
Yeah, there's a book called like Factfulness by this guy Hans Rosling. I've only listened to a little bit of it on Audible, and he's like, basically, if you earn more than like $33 a week, you're in like the top percentile of the world.
Wow.
And like, when you put that into perspective, like I do take issue with stuff like that, because obviously everyone's suffering is relative to them. So if someone is like working class, like on benefits in the UK, like, are you going to invalidate their suffering because they earn more than the like top earner in somewhere in the middle of Africa that's like so poverty stricken, like third world countries? Like, it's all relative. If you've got like a working class part of, like, let's take London for example, there's so much wealth and there's so much poverty.
Oh yeah. And the closer you come into big cities, the closer that, the more apparent that divide becomes. You know, you can walk around the street and you're literally hit from extreme wealth to extreme poverty in the space of a few pavement blocks.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. And it's like obviously we would have to acknowledge our privilege to be in the position that we're in, but then also with the whole people that are like, oh, privilege. It's like, okay, well, like, I still feel like shit sometimes.
Yeah.
So is that not allowed because I'm like, so we've got it pretty good, right? So we're white, cisgender males, heterosexual, middle class. Like, there's so many tick boxes for us in terms of like privilege. But it's like, well, if you still feel shit, Alex, like, you're absolutely fine to feel like shit.
Yeah.
And I think there's a certain sense in the world now that they're trying to squash people's problems just because they come from a space of privilege.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you haven't got it as bad as that person. It's like, okay, well, how helpful is that for me right now? It's not helpful at all. And then that's when people end up getting like super depressed.
Yeah, it's like square peg, round hole situation, isn't it? Like trying to treat everyone the same. And it's, again, it's everybody, each individual is so complex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's impossible to sort of point the finger and be judgmental in how people feel. I've definitely felt that personally. Like, you know, there's moments where, you know, I've never really addressed, like, only recently, the more mindful I'm trying to be, like certain days when you just feel a bit, you know, you can't quite put your finger on it. And then I'd get guilty because I'd be like, what? I look around, I've still got both my parents. They're still healthy and fit. I've got, you know, siblings that are doing well. You know, my family are healthy. They're all doing things successfully. I'm living a middle-class lifestyle. On paper, I literally have nothing to feel miserable about ever. But yet it can be the smallest thing that can kind of build up and you can just feel sort of, I guess, just a bit trapped in your own headspace. And it is normal to feel that way. But the minute I start feeling that way, rather than, until recently at least, rather than trying to address it, honestly, I just start feeling guilty about it, which then makes you spiral.
It does. Down. It really does. That's like why the whole reason I started reading is because I got super depressed, like working in a corporate environment. I was earning all right money. I got to turn up to work at like 9, leave at 6. Like, I was probably working too hard for what I could handle as a human, as like an individual. I was working too much. But I felt bad for feeling bad. And then it's just like, it's like bad squared.
Yeah.
It's a lot worse than just bad. And like you said, like you feel like, oh, you question whether your feelings are valid. It's like, oh, I should be grateful for all these things. Like, you start writing down in the morning, like, oh, I'm grateful I have 4 pillows on my bed and like stuff like that. But
yeah,
if something isn't, like, there's so much to balance in life, right? And if one thing's off, it can just change your whole trajectory. Like, I think it's like if you set a plane off from California to New York, but you put it 1 degree off, it'll end up in like Toronto, I think. And it's like, it's a big difference, but it's just 1 degree.
Yeah.
And those small like changes or imbalances can have such an impact on you. And people don't realize that. And then they feel like it's not valid, which is, it's not helpful for them in whatever situation they're in.
No, it really isn't. But I think the way you've gone about it is like a really honest sort of approach to how you've dealt with it personally through reading, which I think it's really nice how you've sort of opened up this space with a need to read. You've kind of like, you know, because I went, when we first decided to do this, I went kind of right back to some of your early ones.
Yeah.
And it's just great to see, you know, the progression of, it was quite clearly someone that sort of opened up, quite clearly doing it for your own headspace, and you've just kind of made a space privy for people to kind of have access to that too.
Yeah.
Which I think is a really like noble thing to do, which is great, you know.
Yeah. I always wanted it to be a thing that's like, I've started this so that I can obviously improve myself, because a great way to learn is to teach, right? Yeah. So if I read about something and then I teach it to someone else, that solidifies it in me. But I kind of want it to be a place like, look, I am so far from perfect. I've got all these things that I think I'm shit at, or that I'm a bit of a piece of shit for, that I've done in the past. I know that everyone's the same and you can't lie to me. I'm going to go on a journey of like self-improvement. I'm going to learn these things. I'm going to like learn what I think is going to be helpful for me. If you want to join me, like, come with. And now I've like almost become some like weird like authority figure on books, which is crazy. I would never have pictured my life to be this way a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And it's just because I got to a point where I was so low that I was like, I've had enough of this. I don't want to feel like this. I need to do something about it and kind of take on that like responsibility and like accountability with myself. Like, okay, well, no one's going to come and save me. This isn't a Disney film. I'm not a princess.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not Princess Leia. Luke's not coming for me, or whatever it is in Star Wars. I don't know. But like, no one's going to come and save you. So you're going to have to like take it on yourself. And with books, like, mate, there's some super, super intelligent people that have written books, and you can get them as your mentor by just picking it up.
Yeah. It's an amazing... I mean, there's a reason why people always used to tell me as a kid, you know, pick up a book. Mm. All the elders seem to know the score when it came to, like, you know, if you want to know something out and you've got the patience and you know, you've got the tolerance to dig in, all the answers for all of the world's problems can be found on a bookshelf.
Yeah.
You know, there's a book for everything.
There really is.
There really is.
Crazy.
What's your kind of process then when you, because what was the first book? Do you remember the very first book that got you into the whole saga?
Yeah. So I'd just been seeing this orange book on people's like Instagram stories. And I was like, I've never seen books on people's Instagram stories. I was like, okay, this is weird. I'm going to pay attention to this. And it was A Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck by Mark Manson.
Oh, sick, yeah.
And I listened to that and I was like introduced to all of these new concepts. Like, right, if it's not a fuck yes, it's a no. And a value-driven life. And I was like, okay, so what are my values? I was like, I don't actually know. And like when I first went to therapy, she was like, oh, what do your family do? And I told her about what everyone... She was like, no, what your family like? And I told her their jobs. I didn't say like, oh, they're loving, they're caring, yeah, they're funny, all of these things that are like actual traits for people. I just said, this is what their job is. And she was like, do you value what people's jobs are? And I was like, no, not really. I don't think it says stuff about them, but like, it's not actually what matters. I think it was such like a...
Light bulb moment.
Yeah, just a switch just flipped. And I was like, I care way too much about my job title and that's what's making me unhappy.
Yeah.
And there were so many other things in The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck that just changed it for me. And I listened to it about 4 times.
It's brilliant.
And then I started, like, I listened to Why We Sleep, and I just started listening to books. And I was listening to, like, David Goggins.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, well, I can just start reading these books now, because it will take me off my phone. It will take me away from the TV.
That's the one, because he's got a couple out, hasn't he? That's the one where he talks about the God value, like the hierarchy. Mm-hmm. Is that right? Where he talks about how we place things in this mental hierarchy of what we perceive to be the most important things, and how religion used to be that thing centuries ago before we had technology. And all that's really happened is that, you know, that space that was once filled by religion has now been taken up by, you know, a million different, you could slot anything into that space.
Yeah.
It's such a fascinating book. I love that bit actually where he talks about, is it the bit when is he in South Africa when he's like on the edge of the... He's basically sort of... It was after his friend died, is that right?
Yes.
And he's like edging towards the edge of that cliff just to kind of feel the adrenaline push up, because he wanted to like feel something sort of primitive again.
And I can relate to that. I think there's definitely been times where I'm like... I've said about this before on a podcast and I didn't think anyone thought this way, but like sometimes when I'm driving along, especially like when I was in Bali, I'm like, oh, off the road. I could just do that now. And apparently a lot of people think like that, and it's very common in people with like anxiety or who are prone to suffering with anxiety.
Like, I used to think I was mental for thinking things like that. Like I thought, am I like one step away from doing something crazy like that? So I think about it when I'm driving along late at night, because obviously back when gigs were a thing, I'd be like on the motorway at crazy o'clock in the morning and I'd just come past like a lorry, you know, doing 70 or something, and I'd just be thinking, I'm putting so much trust into a complete stranger coming the opposite way. as well. I'd be thinking these things like, you know, all it takes is for him to just change the CD or like to bend, and we're just, you know, everything just hangs like so in the balance, and we're so unaware of it all of the time.
And thankfully for you, no one uses CDs in 2021.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thankfully for me, in one respect, it's bad for the music though. Damn. Yeah. Streams. But I was listening to one of your episodes. I think it was, what was it called? How to Read.
Yes.
How to Read. Because it's something that I've always struggled with when it comes to like, okay, so I've got a stack of books here. And I've been really good at it the last couple of years. I've started, you know, for Christmas now, rather than asking for a gadget, I'll ask for like a book and try and be...
No CD players anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Just try and be sort of, you know, a bit more mature and educated and try and better myself. And my problem is I start a book and I get really into it and it's, you know, but then I'll start another one and then I'm almost like so desperate to get the information to sink in that I forget everything.
I know.
And
what
it's like, so I found that episode you did on how to read quite interesting.
Yeah. Which bit?
The stacking habits.
Okay. Yeah. So like, well, if you want to start a reading habit.
Yeah.
So like everything, like you obviously clean your teeth every day. Right? Yeah. Like I've been close enough to you to smell your breath. I know you clean your teeth. That is automatic for you. At some point during your morning, you will clean your teeth. If you want to start like a reading habit, just make a contract with yourself. It's like, right, so before I clean my teeth this morning, I'm going to read for 15 minutes. Even if I struggle so much with reading that I have to read that one page over and over again, I promise myself 15 minutes. And then when you've done that, bonus time, you've unlocked it, you can clean your teeth, you can get on with your day. Obviously, if you don't read 15 minutes, if you really want to take yourself seriously and take that contract that you've written with yourself seriously, like you're going around with the day with some pretty dirty breath. And I think even like no amount of chewing gum is going to heal no clean teeth. People will tell at some point.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like habit stacking is super important because you just essentially take something you already do and you just bolt something onto it. And then there's other things that like put people off with reading. It's like they can't concentrate. What people have to realize, like their attention span is like a muscle, it can be trained.
Yeah.
So it's like that little bit of progressive overload, like tiny bit of overexposure on what you're used to will then boost your attention span. All of a sudden you can read for half an hour and you're like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
And also what people don't do is they set the wrong attitude when they read. It's like, you're like, I want to absorb all of this information.
Yeah.
It's usually someone's life work in a book, or at least like 5 years of their work will go into a book. You can't take on board 5 years of research for someone. Like all you have to do is just work out, or firstly accept that you're not going to remember everything, and then secondly like work out what you want to know. So like ask the book a question. If you met the author, what question would you ask them, knowing the subject of the book?
That's a really good,
and then you find the answers, and like that's how you'll remember it because you've already set your intention before you start reading.
Another thing you mentioned as well was like sort of reviewing it as the chapters go by, which I only recently started doing. So like now I'll take like a notepad. If I'm reading a book at the end of the chapter or something, I might jot a few things down and then I'll ask those things to myself the following day, you know, and be like, did I understand that? Or what was that, you know, what was that particular phrase or word that was used or whatever the topic might be.
Yeah.
And then the other one is just like, talking about it, what did you call it?
Oh, just like speaking about
sort of
it.
Teaching, yeah, basically sort of, yeah, the minute you sort of offload the information you've recently learned with someone, it helps sort of solidify that into your mind, doesn't it?
Yeah. I came up with a fictional friend of mine that will help people learn to read, and I actually haven't spoken about this yet, so this will be like a
cool
an exclusive. I put it out to my Patreon because I wrote an article on essentially like learning and remembering what you read. So his name's James, and James remembers everything he reads, and he's really good at it, but also like not everything, because James journals for the J. A is like attitude, so he like he realizes he's not going to remember everything, but he does remember a lot because he's James. M is, oh, I've forgotten it. You're kidding me. E is educate, so you teach others. And then S was something I've forgotten. But let's just say that Jam, we'll change him to Jam. Jam journals, gets his attitude right. Yeah. And then like,
it's all about the attitude though. The A is the big one.
Yeah.
You had the right attitude there.
I'll give you guys the full James. The irony of that is just
It's good though.
It's great.
Some top
because you can't remember
right
everything, right? Like, it's meant to be my job. That was going to be the best soundbite ever, and I fluffed it.
It's all good. So on that note then, how do you think you make reading like accessible? Because definitely growing up, I felt like there was, being sort of coming from a working class kind of background, there was kind of a snobbery I felt around like reading.
Yeah.
And it kind of always put me off a little bit, stupidly. I always felt like I wasn't good enough to pick up a book, just for some weird reason.
Yeah, I've dealt with people that like are living examples of the snobbery in reading.
Really?
When I went to Jersey last year and I was at this party with my friends and some guy was like, "Oh, like, have you read many of the classics?" And I was like, "Oh, nah, man, like I don't have any interest in reading the classics." And he was like, "Oh, can you really call yourself a reader then?" I'm like, "Well, mate, I read books, so yeah." And it's like, why, like, I always say like this, and I understand that, like, some classics were, like, revolutionary in terms of, like, writing styles and stories and the messages that they brought across. Like, there are some great classics out there, but I don't see anyone, or it's very rare that you see someone driving around in a car that was built in 1920s.
Exactly, man. It's like art or music. It's, you know, you could be snobby about, oh, you don't listen to X, Y, or Z. And it's just like, well, you know, it's the same with anything. You've got to start from a place of enjoyment, haven't you? It's like, I think the reason I got put off it early on is because I picked up a couple of books when I was young that just didn't interest me.
Mm.
And hence why I was just like, oh, that must be just what reading is.
Yeah,
fucking boring.
Yeah.
You know, when of course it doesn't have to be that way. Same with art, same with music. You start from a place of, you can kind of work backwards then, can't you?
Yeah.
I guess, you know, you find a book that's really ticks your boxes and then you think, well, and do what you say, maybe research the author, see where he got his inspiration from. Mm. You can kind of work it back, really.
Yeah, you just got to follow your like genuine curiosity for things. Like, so for me, I'm like, I always like diagnose, I'll prescribe myself a book. I'm like, right, where's my life like lacking at the moment? If I was going to lay it all out on the table, like what needs more attention? And like sometimes like, let's take the books that are on the table. So like Essentialism, that's a book that's all about whittling down the things in your life until you're only doing the things that are absolutely necessary, and like how liberating that is, and how like saying no to things similar to what like Mark Manson said. There was a time in my life where like I felt like I was just doing too much. So I was like, oh, I'll read that book. The Book of Rest, that book, I was actually offered that book by the publisher. They emailed me randomly. I was like, I'm doing too much. I need to actually switch off. And not in terms of switch off, like I just sit there and mindlessly scroll or like mindlessly watch stuff, or sit there and read and call it relaxing. It's about doing nothing, not even meditating. It's just about focusing on like the points in between your breath, those small like flashes of clarity that you get at the end of each breath. And you focus on those in that book, and like there's so many exercises. And it was just like revolutionary. Like sometimes I'll just sit for 10 minutes and I'll just do nothing. And like that's rest, and you do feel recharged after. It's crazy. Like feel like ready to go out to be like super cyan. Like
because I noticed that you
feel ready.
You do meditate, don't you? Did that did that book inspire you to sort of go?
Nah, I've been meditating for almost like 2 years now.
Really?
Someone that I used to work with introduced me to like Sam Harris.
Right.
And then I did his meditation course, and then I've now just started doing like an hour a day, and that's intense. But I feel so good for it.
So are you literally just kind of in what I consider, because I actually don't, I mean, I do, my form of meditation is gardening. Sounds really stupid and old man. But like I really just enjoy it, and like because it's so far removed from like trying to focus on music or the podcasts or like whatever it might be, you're always self-absorbed with your next ambition. And when I'm doing the gardening, the only ambition I've got is I hope this seed germinates and I can have like some tomatoes or something. And it's just a really nice thing to do. So I kind of been treating that as like my form of meditation through like the last lockdown. But is your meditation, do you kind of just, is it more?
So I quite literally, like, as soon as I get up in the morning, I'll just put my meditation cushion on the floor and I just sit. And I just let whatever wants to come up, just I let it come up, I let it pass. I like breathe into it because my hips start to hurt intensely about 15 minutes and it doesn't seem to be getting any better, which is annoying, but I'm sure at some point it will calm down. But I'll just sit there for an hour just trying to like focus on my breath. And sometimes like you get like your little anxieties will come in, like what are you looking forward to in the day, like what happened yesterday that's annoying, and all those thoughts will come up. And after about 20 minutes, like it's just a slight like fuzz in my brain. It's a really weird thing to like try and explain, but it's, you know, when you're just about to fall asleep and you get that, like, it's almost like, asleep.
Yeah.
You just stay at that, like, vibration. And I don't want to sound too hippie talking about vibrations.
No, but, no.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it's also very challenging because sitting there for an hour, like, with yourself, like, I don't know about you, but I'm really annoying in my brain.
Yeah, my brain's pretty full of shit going around all the time.
Yeah, I think maybe it's everyone. There are a few people, but I think they've gone and like lived in caves for like 3-4 years and just meditated the whole time.
Yeah, it's like I read a little book once. I might get the author's name wrong. Tim Parks, a book called Calm.
Not heard of it, no.
It is, it's basically a book of his salvation towards and his discovery towards meditation, really.
Yeah.
And he came from a very busy like New York journalist lifestyle where he's
classic.
Busy like bombing around trying to find the next best story, and he went on one of these silent retreats that was like you had to hand all your gadgets in, and basically I think it was like 3 weeks, and he went there with the intention of completely debunking it. And it's just his whole story of his own recollection of going to this silent retreat, and at first being super skeptical and negative towards the whole process and just constantly trying to debunk it. And obviously by the end of it, succumbing to the process.
Yeah.
And being overwhelmed with like this sense of emotion at the end of just like at the end of it when they closed they did like a little ceremony and everybody could talk again.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like this weird revelation of coming to terms. He had to like come back to himself like really slowly, and it was really interesting book actually.
Yeah, like those silent retreats, like I've done a podcast with the guy's name's Meditation Dave. His name's not actually Meditation Dave.
I saw a couple of clips, yeah.
that's what he calls himself, and he does like Vipassana meditation, and Vipassana meditation is kind of what, like he was the one that inspired me to do an hour a day. He was like, if you're doing 20 minutes, it's like you're turning up. He used jiu-jitsu as an example for me because that's what relevant. He was like, you're going and you're doing the warm-up, and before you learn anything, you're leaving the class. And I was like, okay.
I'll sit
with myself for a little bit longer then, if that is the case. And those stories are very common of people having a super busy life and then they go and do meditation and it's like revelation in their mind. It's like no one is, you're not exempt from meditation being good for you. No one is. People think they are because they'll do 10 minutes and their brain will be super busy and they're like, oh, I don't like it, it didn't work for me.
Yeah.
It's like what thing that can change your life works in 10 minutes.
Yeah, true.
Nothing. It always takes like consistent graft. I've now been meditating for like, I think the streak today was like 347 days in a row. Like I'm getting to the point now where I'm like, I can really see the benefits.
Yeah.
But I also before that was inconsistent for a year. That's like 2 years. It's just that delayed gratification thing. And it's not necessarily like it's gratification. It's just like a nothingness. It's like a calm.
Yeah.
I don't get road rage ever. It's sweet.
Sounds like I need some.
You do need to change your gardening meditation.
Yeah.
keep that, but also meditate, honestly.
It's the whole stigma around it as well, though. Like coming from a pretty normal, normal, whatever that means. But like a lot of my friends, the kind of school I went to and stuff, you know, they'd hear me talk about meditation. They'd just like instantly rip the piss. Just like really stupidly. And now I'm at the age where I can be like, I'm better than that. I don't care if you take,
you know,
if you find it funny, you know. But when you're young, you're really susceptible to...
Oh, you care so much.
You care so much about like how you're being perceived again by everybody around you. But it is, you know, I've done it a couple of times with some friends that are really into it. And I have, from the short experiences I've had, I could see how it could become...
Yeah, you
an
can get some
part of your day.
Get some crazy places if you sit there for long enough. And I think what people undervalue is getting to know themselves. And like when you sit there for an hour, or even when you're doing like 20 minutes, half an hour.
Yeah, how many times do people do that nowadays? They're constantly like fixed. Their attention is always
other people.
Yeah, fixed to, other people, I guess, through different mediums.
Yeah, and like you're the most important person you're ever going to get to know, because the more you get to know yourself and understand like what you'll understand, like what your attitudes towards things, random things that pop up in meditation that you would never really think about, you'll be like, oh, that's what I think about that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my understanding of this particular thing. And that is how I feel. And I don't think people spend enough time like trying to understand how they feel about either themselves or situations or the world or life.
Yeah.
But through meditation,
again, because it's uncomfortable, I guess, you know, people don't want to feel uncomfortable. They don't want to feel any version of suffering.
Yeah.
But really, when you've got those niggles in your mind and you have to address them silently to yourself, that's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But doing like, you know, coming to terms with those ideas and coming up with a strategy to sort of overcome whatever problem it might be.
Yeah.
Like that in itself is a huge reward, isn't it? And I think allowing yourself to have that time.
Yeah.
Is really vital, more so now than ever, I think.
Definitely.
Which kind of brings me on quite nicely with obviously Mind Cafe.
Mind Cafe.
You're going to be writing for us, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm super excited. Like I like writing. I do like a weekly email thing, and I love writing the emails. It's very different to how it would be to like write an article, because I just do like sentence, and like link them together that way. Because competing for someone's attention on email, it's like it's a full box, and I'm not offering any discount codes, so
yeah.
It's a competitive place, like emails, but like actual writing, like I've always enjoyed doing it. So to be given that opportunity from Mind Cafe is great. So thanks, guys. Ledge.
Yeah, we're looking forward to having you. So is it going to be a regular? You're going to be contributing to.
Gemma's nodding. Yeah.
It is going to be a regular thing. Yeah, we're excited to have your take on self improvement. Really, I guess, you know, because the journey that you've been on so far with The Need to Read is really impressive. And
thanks, man.
Yeah, like I say, thanks to Gemma really for being the wonderful connector that she is, and bringing these amazing people to light.
Yeah, I'm amazing. Thanks.
But yeah, it's cool, man. That's what I wanted to ask you.
Okay,
Jamie Haskell, man, because I'm a big rugby fan. What's the connection there? I saw that on your Instagram.
Mate, you'd be surprised who responds to DMs. It's honestly, people always ask me things like that. Like someone asked me yesterday, I went and sat at the beach and had some chicken wings when I was in the shop. Like someone I hadn't seen for ages. Oh, mate, James Haskell on your podcast. I was like, yeah, mate, if I'm honest, I literally didn't even know who he was until I got him on, because I don't like rugby.
Yeah. Because I thought, oh, that'd be a good talking point. I did like a little Google, Ed Cunningham, Jamie Haskell, couldn't find a thing. And I was like, oh, must be one of those like little secret connection somewhere that's not like public, but just literally slid into your DMs.
I slid into his, and I was like, I've just started listening to your book. Do you want to like come and chat about it? Just gave him like the numbers and stuff. And he was like, yeah, sure. Email me. And I think especially like the pandemic's helped so much with like the big names being able to say yes. Cause like they're at home.
They're trapped. Yeah.
What are they going to do apart from like chat to me on Zoom?
Yeah.
So that was really good. Getting him on, like he was an entertaining guy. Called me a twink. I hadn't heard of that phrase before, but essentially it's just a early 20s homosexual man who's very hairless and quite handsome. And I was like, hey, like, right, I'll take it. You're wrong on some parts, but like whatever. It's like James Haskell thinks I'm handsome.
Sounds like some rugby banter 101.
Yeah, definitely is.
Didn't he get into MMA as well recently?
Yeah, he signed to Bellator.
Yeah.
Beast. I've heard one of my mates is like used to train with him. This wasn't even like a connect. He was like, I'll ask him if he remembers me, like London Shoot Fighters or something. He did jiu-jitsu with him there. Like, I think when he was on the edge of like coming out of rugby, he started doing a bit of jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't seen him fight. I imagine he'll probably get smoked if he's in the heavyweight division.
Yeah.
In Bellator. Like, he is a professional athlete and he's gonna have that attitude, but some of these guys have been fighting for years.
Yeah,
and you just can't beat time on the clock.
No, you can't. it's interesting. It's pretty ballsy to just be like, I'm going to step in, you know, have a full rugby career and then step into.
Yeah. He wants to do everything though, apparently. Yeah. DJ, did I'm a Celebrity, rugby, MMA. I think you name it, he'll try it once. And like, that was a good thing. It's like, you see his attitude, like, he'll say yes to everything because he's out to do the best for him.
Yeah.
And it's so inspiring to like speak to people like that, because I think a lot of celebrities like try and come off and say that they're doing it for the people, when he's like, actually, like, I'm doing this for me. Like, I want to have like,
well, they try and create this weird illusion where like they're almost removed from the public. They make out like they're giving them something, where really they don't really want anything to do with you.
Yeah.
Whereas like the fact that he just got back to you and was like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. So
it was
sound.
Like a great sign.
And he said he'd do it again as well at the end. He was like, anytime you want to chat about books, just let me know. And I was like, sound.
That's really
email
cool.
him every day, like, hey, you read this, James?
That's sweet. So what's next for you and a need to read then, before we wrap this bad boy up?
What is next? I just want to like push on. I want to get a studio. So like, this is like in years to come, just get a studio, have like a permanent place that I can come and have people in face to face. Just essentially just keep doing what I'm doing. Like, the people that follow me now, like, I'm not really, I just want to look after them and like, and provide the best value content for them.
Yeah.
And if that subsequently means growth, like, that's great. But I like, whenever I do like giveaways and stuff, like, I'm never focused on like, oh, share this with your friends. Like, I want the people that have like followed me from the start. I want to thank them.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, do stuff for them. So essentially, a need to read is just going to go in the direction of whatever that week sort of come, like, my interests are that week, essentially.
Yeah.
So I wish I had a more solid answer, but essentially it's just going to be episodes every Monday and Tuesday.
Great.
Well, Monday and Thursday. And writing for Mind Cafe as well.
Yeah, I was gonna say, well, we're looking forward to having you on the magazine front going forward as a new feature. I think your knowledge is gonna be welcomed.
Legend.
It's gonna be good, man. Thanks ever so much for making the trip up to London today. It's been nice to finally get to meet you face to face.
Yeah, thanks.
I'm so sick of
me,
Zoom.
Mate,
this is so much nicer. I can't wait to never have to Zoom anyone again.
If anyone's got Zoom stock, sell it soon, I reckon.
Yeah, definitely. But it's been lovely to speak to you, Ed, and we'll catch you soon.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.